In a famous passage in his book, Aspects of the Novel, the English novelist E.M. Forster explains the difference between a story and a plot. He said, a story is the queen died and the king died. A plot is the queen died and the king died of grief. In other words, a plot is where you have something that both explains the action and moves it forward. A story, according to Forster, is just a sequence of events without any understanding of why the sequence ties together, where it's going, what the people are feeling. This is how children tell a story. And he said, and I said, and I said, and he said, and then this, and then that, and the other thing. And it's just a sequence of stories for which, believe it or not, there is a name. When you tell a story and begin and, it's called parataxis. And parataxis, which might seem like a very primitive way of telling a story, and also the way that a child would tell a story, is the way very often the Bible tells a story. The Bible is filled with parataxis, that is, a sequence of events without explanation, without a statement about causality, without saying, therefore. God said, let there be light, and there was light. But it doesn't say, therefore there was light. God said something, something happened. And that connection, the connection of and, is what we see in the book that we read today, the book that you heard Cantor Feldman sing the first chapter of, the book of Ruth. A friend of mine, a rabbi in New York, Rabbi Moshe Taub, wrote to me before Shavuot that of the 85 pesukim, the 85 verses, the 85 sentences in the book of Ruth, only 8 of them don't begin with the letter Vav, with and. The other 79, or yes, 85, one second, the other 77, the other 77 all begin with the whatever happened. And that parataxis, that sort of parade of parataxis, tells you something about the way the Bible tells a story and the way Ruth tells a story, because what happens when you give a sequence is you impel the reader to fill in all the stuff that the story doesn't tell you. One of the reasons there's so much rabbinic midrash is because the Bible doesn't tell us. We don't know what Ruth is thinking. We don't know what Naomi is thinking. We don't know what Boaz is thinking, except by what they do and by what is done to them. But what interests me is why 8 sentences? Why not 10 sentences without Vav? Why not 6 sentences without Vav? So let's do a little exploration of numbers. First of all, as you may know, the practice of what is called gematria, that is assigning numbers to Hebrew letters and then figuring out significance from them, is widespread in the Jewish world. It's why chai equals 18. And even though it might seem artificial, remember that when Hebrew started, numbers and letters were the same. We didn't have Arabic numerals or Roman numerals to represent numbers. If you wanted to say 8, you used a chet. If you wanted to say 18, you would use a yud and a chet. So when you say chai is 18, it literally is 18. And therefore, the idea of using numbers to represent, or rather using words to represent numbers and deriving significance, it's almost organic, it's almost baked into the Jewish tradition. So what does Ruth represent more than anything else? Ruth, of course, is the great story of conversion. Now, how many mitzvot does a convert have to take on? Don't speak too quickly because you're liable to get it wrong. You're going to say 613. But that's not actually true. You could say one, and some would say one. But if you want to count the mitzvot in their particulars, you'll remember that there are seven mitzvot that, according to the Jewish tradition, everyone is supposed to observe. The Sheva mitzvot b'nei Noach. So if there are seven mitzvot that everyone is supposed to observe, how many mitzvot does a convert have to take on? There are 613 altogether, guys. Okay? If you don't have to take on seven, then how many are you left with? 606. Thank you. The financial adepts in the front row got that right away. 606. Now, the name Ruth. Resh is how much in Hebrew? Anyone know? 200. Tav is how much? 400. And the middle letter Vav is how much? 6. So what does Ruth's name add up to? 606. The exact number of mitzvot she had to take on. So of course she's the paradigm of conversion. You see how gematria works? It's fun. You could spend all day doing this. And people do. But I want to explore the number. I want to explore the number 8. Why 8 sentences in the book of Ruth don't begin with a Vav? That is the sort of pseudo-gematria that I'm interested in this morning. Think about what it is that a Vav represents. The word and. What does and represent? It represents continuity. Continuation. And this happened. And that happened. Has it ever occurred to you, or has it ever happened to you, that you're saying something and you put an and at the end of your sentence and then you realize you have to keep going? You caught yourself. Because you can't close a sentence with an and, even though you can begin a sentence with an and. No matter what your English teacher told you. But nobody ends a sentence with an and draws you forward. So and is continuity, and is life, and is continuing. But eight in the Jewish tradition is past completion. There are 7 days to creation, and creation is complete. A child has to be alive for 7 days, live a full week, have a Shabbat before they can have it breed, because 8 is past complete. And one of the 8 sentences in the book of Ruth that doesn't start with an and is, "Where you die, I will die." Even in the grammar and structure of Ruth, it points beyond itself. It reminds us, and we read it on Shavuot, on Yizkor, that all the ands of life require us to supply the meaning. That life doesn't give its own meaning. That life piled on life, as the poet put it, needs us to decide what comes after the end. When we come to a Yizkor service, that is exactly what we do. We look back over a life full of incidents, full of ands, and we decide what that life meant. What it meant in itself, and what it means to us. Ruth decided that the meaning of her life would be an attachment to a people, a fidelity to God, and a mission of love. That's what she does. She goes with Naomi because she falls in love with her, and then marries Boaz to make a new family. You don't get that from all the ands. You get that from the break in continuity. The break in continuity that death represents in our lives, the radical difference before and after, and the break in continuity when you change an and to a why. Not just an accumulation of incidents, but a pattern of meaning. The Talmud has a very strange and beautiful comment. It says, you know, a harp has seven strings, but the harp of the Mashiach, of the Messiah, will have eight strings. I think of that as the sentence beyond the and. The meaning of all of the ands of the world and of history will finally be realized in that eighth string, the string of the Messiah's harp. But in the meantime, we're the ones who add that meaning. We're the ones who, out of our pain and our loss, out of what we miss and what we wish we had again, we draw on that eighth string and we make out of our own grief that music of meaning that allows us to understand the pattern of life, of loss, of prayer, and of eternity. By the end of the book of Ruth, we know that a child will be born. He will be the eighth son. His name will be David. And from him will come the Messiah, carrying that harp that will ease our pain and turn all our ands into amends.